Bill Zimpfer joins me this morning on a couple of those topics. Good morning, Bill.
How you doing, Bill?
Good, partner. Let's start with this tax reform first. Trump's trying to get this thing over the line. It's a razor-thin vote in the Senate, right?
Yeah, and if this were a NASCAR race, Bill, I'd say we are under a caution flag right now. Things are still moving, but we're not moving at top speed. This after Marco Rubio came out yesterday and said he can't commit to this tax bill unless the child tax credit is increased. And Marco Rubio knows that he has a lot of political leverage here because the Republicans have to get this thing done before the end of the year. They don't want Doug Jones seated in the Democratic side of the Senate early next year. So they've got to get this thing done. Rubio's holding a lot of cards here, and there are also some other issues with tax reform now. You still have Bob Corker, who's questioning the deficit, along with Rand Paul. You also have Susan Collins of Maine, who's opposed to several issues here. And then John McCain and Thad Corcoran are two senators who have health issues, and there's some questions whether they actually may be able to vote. So, under caution right now, but by next week, we could have an all-out wreck on the track.
Back on.
We got another deadline coming up for a possible government shutdown on Friday midnight. And how about this one for you, Bill? The House is proposing a deal that would fund the military through the fiscal year, but the rest of government operations through mid-January. That's not expected to fly in the Senate, but the House is actually talking about voting on it, passing it, and then leaving town, throwing the ball right into the Senate court with a shutdown coming Friday midnight.
Typical Washington little drama going into the holidays. Back on Rubio and McCain for a second, Bill. Rubio won number one. This was the same little Marco who now the president really seems to respect a lot, right?
Well, and you know what? This is where President Trump's personal attacks on others, I think, come in. Because
right.
You know that Marco Rubio does not forget the little Marco comments and the relentless jabbing of him during the presidential campaign. He's going to use all the leverage he's got right now.
And McCain looks like he's really in some health issues right now, too.
Yeah. John McCain is hospitalized. They say that he should be able to vote next week on tax reform. Thad Corcoran is also expected back, but still question marks.
Bill Zimpfer, for a good wrap up for what's going on this morning. Bill, thanks. Have a good weekend.
You too, Bill. Thanks.
Let's get a preview of our Sunday. That means, of course, Fox News Sunday. Chris Wallace joins us. Chris, good morning. What you got lined up for us?
Well, we know one guest we're going to have, the new senator-elect from the state of Alabama, Doug Jones, the Democrat who pulled off a really shocking victory in a deep red state, beating Roy Moore. He'll be our guest on Sunday. And, you know, what I really want to talk to him about is get a sense of what kind of a senator he's going to be. Is he going to be a mainstream, what they call a Washington Democrat, or will he be an Alabama Democrat, which is a different, much more moderate, much more conservative kind of Democrat? And my guess is he'll be a combination of both. He's going to have to play to the base that got him elected, but he's also going to have to play to a lot of those people who probably would have voted for any other Republican except Roy Moore, and show them that, you know, they can live with him as a senator when he faces re-election in 2020.
Good question, and I look forward to it. Did you hear or feel the exhale of the establishment when Moore lost?
I will tell you, I was up on Capitol Hill yesterday talking to a number of Senate Republicans, and yes, they lost a seat. They now have, instead of 52 seat majority, they have a 51 seat majority, razor thin. They could not have been happier. I'm telling you, they were thrilled. They did not want to have Roy Moore. They could all envision every time they walked down the hall, did you hear what Senator Moore said? And, you know, do you support it? And what about the ethics investigation? Are you going to vote to expel him? They are really, I mean, it was fascinating to see. It wasn't mixed feelings. They were just out and out happy he's not going to be in the Senate through 2018 and with a tough midterm facing them.
Finally, Chris, tax deal, whatever the president ends up signing before he heads off to Mar-a-Lago, this will be the capper on the year for him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Two big things next week, and we're going to cover both of those as well as Doug Jones. One is the tax bill, and it sure looks like they're going to get that passed probably by the middle of the week. But then next Friday, they've got to pass something or the government runs out of money. And I think they know that, you know, if the government runs out of money 2 days before Christmas, that all the good feeling on the tax bill is going to go out the window. So they got two things to get accomplished in the next week.
Look forward to your profile and talking with Doug Jones and more Sunday morning as it plays out on Fox News Sunday with Chris Wallace. We won't see you before, so have a great Christmas, okay, friend?
Thank you. Same to you and same to all of your listeners in Cleveland.
All right, every Friday, Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com checks in. Graduate Benedictine, eight-time Ohio Sports Writer of the Year, columnist with the Plain Dealer and Cleveland.com. This is Bill Wills. Terry, good morning. Mike Snyder working that calendar, getting that three-day weekend. So Jensen Lewis is in, although he's debating going back to baseball because they are paying for relief pitching now.
Terry. I know, and I was just thinking, coming out of the bullpen is just much better than it ever was before, Jensen.
Now, they're starting to pay people the way they should have been paid back in my day. You know, the seventh inning matters, the eighth inning matters. It's not all just about the ninth inning, Terry.
Oh, boy, I could tell you were a starting
Yeah. He'd have to take a pay cut, though, to go back into baseball,
right.
So he's debating
right.
It. Yeah.
You know, I just figured he just came out of the bullpen to, like, give Snyder a break.
Well, and that's the way it should be. You know, you take care of the people who take care of you.
Let's get through our teams. Let me start with last night first, guys. Cavs 121-112 win. Terry, you posted a couple days ago, look, this team's just going to get better, too, with these guys coming back, right?
Exactly, and hey, they thought they might have Tristan Thompson. They didn't have him, and I don't know when if they're ever going to have Derrick Rose back. But they have Isaiah Thomas coming, and you could just see them playing so well as a unit, and you know, they're enjoying themselves. All those things happen. You know, the great spirits follow after you start to win some games, and then. But I'll tell you this: when you make three pointers, life is a lot easier.
Yeah, and Terry, I think the other thing that makes life easy, this team, they still haven't played, I think, collectively their best defense, but I think that's understandable without having everyone healthy. Once that happens, I think you see this team probably take another step. And last night, you look at the Lakers, a very transition-oriented team. I thought the Cavaliers ran with them and executed in transition about as well as they have all season long.
Right, and earlier in the year, a lot of times they just ran up and down the floor. They were making turnovers or forcing bad shots. And I mean, in the end, they won that game because one, you always have LeBron, but secondly, they just were a more experienced team than the Lakers. But it's exciting. And, of course, to me, I covered Larry Nance's dad when he was with the Cavs. I mean, I wrote about the trade when he came here, everything, because I was on the beat to see his son doing so well. And, you know, Larry's son had only one Division I offer. That was from the University of Wyoming. Larry Scheid, a Cleveland guy, was the coach that brought him there. He overcame Crohn's disease. He overcame a major knee injury. He's had some other knee injuries. To see him playing so well for the Lakers, I mean, it's a great local story. He played at Revere High. You know, he did win one of these basketball powers. That was a cool part of that game for me.
Terry Pluto's chat this morning brought to you by Universal Windows Direct. Let me jump to the Tribe. We started with a little baseball. Terry, winter meetings wrapped up. We lose Smith and Shaw. You concerned we didn't add anybody yet?
Well, I know Jensen was a volunteer, but yeah, I think you're at least one pitcher short in terms of a veteran guy. But my goodness, $15 million for Joe Smith too. It was amazing. You sit there and go, right now Brian Shaw's making as much as Andrew Miller. I'm sure Andrew Miller's thinking, boy, I wonder what I'm going to get paid next year.
Yeah, and Terry, to me, that's the thing, is where this Tribe team is looking at. You understand what Andrew Miller is worth, and perhaps what you don't spend this year on relief pitching. You can make a very lucrative offer, because let's all remember, too, Cody Allen, in his final year of arbitration, he'll be a free agent next year. So perhaps the Tribe, looking 1 year ahead here, saying, all right, we'd rather gather some funds here to be able to pay for that. One more thing. And I heard talking with some people at the winter meetings, the big rumor has been, okay, how can they move Jason Kipnis in that salary? The other thing that came up a lot, it may not have been talked about a lot, Danny Salazar has been on a lot of radars of a lot of teams because teams are thinking they can buy low here. And with that potential, I know Tito in the front office came out and said it's going to take a boatload to get him, but an intriguing guy to follow as this year moves on.
Right, I've been thinking they've all along they're going to trade Salazar because, you know, the value of starting pitching. And here we're talking about guys in seventh, eighth inning, and all respect to Mr. Seventh and Eighth Inning sitting there behind the microphone. But well, let's face it, if you got a guy that could make an all-star team, and even if he's had some problems since then, a lot of them think, well, I could fix him or whatever it is. I just think, and the other thing about Kipnis, hey, you really played the game, Jensen, so you know more than I do. when you're hurt, you don't play well.
Right.
And when he's healthy, he plays well.
Yeah.
That's Jason's career in a sentence.
Yeah, good take. 30 seconds left. Shoot. Browns Sunday. Ravens still playing for maybe a playoff. We're playing for pride, I guess, Terry?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
I covered the Browns.
Good answer.
I just wanted to check it off that we did mention the Browns because somebody's paying us. All right. Terry Pluto, Cleveland Plain Dealer, Cleveland.com. Follow him on Twitter. Terry, God bless. Merry Christmas, but don't
see
you before.
See you guys.
Be good, partner. Thank you, Bob. Best team coverage of the Browns every Friday. Mike Snyder catches up with Bernie.
Time for our weekly visit with Bernie Kosar. Bernie, first off, before we talk about on the field, General Manager John Dorsey has been on the job for about a week, has made a few moves, said goodbye to Kenny Britt. Just your vibe from John Dorsey as he moves into that General Manager's chair?
Probably a little biased towards him. You know, me and him are about the same age. I had the honor of playing and practicing against him in my career. He came from Connecticut and the Yankee Conference in, like, I think 1984 as his fourth round pick with the Packers. I think he still leads the Packers in tackles by a special teams player at 35 tackles in a season. And then, if you remember, Mike, when me and you were starting out, we used to go to Green Bay and practice training camp when Lindy Infante went there after the 86-87
season. That's right.
And we spent, you know, a week or two or a couple of years practicing against each other, playing each other in the regular season once or twice, and then also annually we were basically playing in preseason. So I got a really good chance to look him in the eyes, vice versa. He got a good chance to check me on our look in the eyes and, you know, play against each other. And I like that kind of tough football mentality.
Bernie, with your inside knowledge of the sport, I just sense a vibe, though, from fans everywhere that there's a better feel for hope for the Browns going forward, having a traditional football man with quite a resume behind him and John Dorsey now calling the shots personnel-wise. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, the main thing, and this isn't to cast arrows at anybody in the past or what was happening or what's going to happen or what's happening now. The beautiful thing about football is that it's cut and dry. You caught the pass or you didn't. You won the game or you lost the game. There's no real in between. And that being said, you know, in bigger companies, when you don't win any games, like a publicly traded company or a big sports team, if you don't win any games, somebody tends to have to pay the price for that. All that being said, you know, I think guys who are in this business kind of understand the ramifications of winning, and they know the painful reality of losing, and this is unfortunately what comes with losing, is there is going to be changes.
Wanted to ask you, he made a comment in an interview this week that he has seen Baker Mayfield play 6 times. Now, we know that the Browns are going to be looking at a quarterback in the draft. One of the big knocks on Mayfield is his lack of height. Now, you always have talked very clearly about your unathletic abilities, but you had height working for you, Bernie. How much did that help you?
Well, the height helps you. I think in the spread game today, the height thing maybe isn't as big a factor. And you could look at the Russell Wilsons, phenomenal players like that, where it's not as essential maybe as it was in the past. I do think the thing that's essential is the durability and the intelligence when you're playing. The guys, the hits, we all see and actually hear the sound of the hits these days. And the durability issue of being able to stay out there and withstand those type of hits and be available for 16 football games when you play that style of football. Now, you know, we talked a lot ad nauseum when Johnny Manziel was here, and I am not at all comparing Baker to Johnny, But if you even take the stuff off the field out of consideration, running into those big guys on the other side of the ball on the defense on a consistent basis is not a long-term recipe for health and being on the field. And he's got to really probably tailor his game a little bit to withstand the constant barrage of hits that he's able to take in college. I'm not sure many people physically could take that type of beating in the NFL.
Good stuff. Interesting take. Bernie Kosar, part of the best team coverage of the Browns. There'll be more of Bernie on the podcast today. Check it out. Listen at your convenience. Online, WTAM.com, podcast page, or do a search on the iHeartRadio app. Bill Wills, good morning. Complete Cavaliers coverage every Friday. Jim Jones checks in. Your morning Cavs update is brought to you by Huntington Bank, one of a bank that believes in looking out for its customers. Then you won Huntington. Jim, of course, Cavs legend, member of the 80 world champion Lakers, an alum as his Lakers were in last night, taking on his Cavs, and he and John Michael called it. Hi, Jim. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good, buddy. 121-112 Cavs win. First of all, old school NBA score to start with, and a nice win for the Cavs, right?
Yeah, it is, because it's one of those games that you have to win. They go very, very young, very, very small all the time, and they're a fast-paced team. So they offered some challenges, but as the game wore on, you just got the feeling the Cavs were going to win this thing, and it wasn't going to be that difficult, and it wasn't.
Jim, you look at this squad now, and we're still obviously waiting for a healthy Tristan Thompson. He was held out for precautionary reasons last night. Isaiah Thomas, hopefully, here on the horizon. But it seems with this team now winning their last 16 out of 17, there has been a couple of things that have stood out to me. Number one, I think their transition offense and defense has really improved. They haven't had as many turnovers, and the efficiency, not only from LeBron, but the bench. It seems like that second unit has really put this team on another level.
It really has. I agree with you totally. You know, the bench is one of those things that really good teams have. We haven't had a bench in the LeBron second era. That's been a real problem for us. And it has put him in a situation where he's had to overcome deficits, a loss of momentum, and all of those issues that happens to teams that when they substitute and they look down the bench, they have no way to maintain, create, or even expand leads. And so it makes it harder on the starters to be effective. They really have to play harder. But the luxury LeBron has had since we do have a bench is that he's getting what we call quality rest. He's resting maybe 3 to 4 minutes more than he did last year. And when he comes back in the game, we're either tied, we're up one or two, or the bench has really expanded the lead and created momentum. So those are easier minutes to play under, and he deserves it. And the example I can give you is his fourth quarter scoring has still been magnificent.
Jim, you played out in L.A., and I know one of the storylines last night, obviously, with Lonzo Ball coming in, the first kind of head-to-head matchup, and no, it wasn't exactly that. He had two teams on the floor. But just talk about what you saw with your own eyes now, being able to see Lonzo Ball and how he has handled his rookie season. Let's face it, in a city and in a franchise, that the microscope is going to be on him every single moment.
Well, the thing I like about him is his ability to push the ball up the floor after major misses. That's more reminiscent of Magic Johnson. With we were really the first Showtime team in 79. And after major misses, we would push the ball up the floor and try to get easier looks before we went into our 5-on-5 with Kareem down low, which is a slower-paced game. So it gave us a two-fold threat in the transition and then the half court, of course, featuring Kareem as first and second option. So teams were really aware of us. This kid does the same thing. He pushes the ball up the floor, tries to give his teammates easy looks, and he's a willing defender, and he's totally committed to the pass. And that's a little bit rare in rookies. You know, Magic was like that. There weren't many. LeBron was always a passer first until he got caught up in the scoring thing. But I think you can build around a guy like that. So I don't blame the Lakers. They're very optimistic. I think a lot of the criticism has been unfair, and it makes good storylines, but it's really unfair to this kid because he's just playing on what he knows, and he's a rookie like all rookies.
Yep. Jim Jones, I got to tell you, you're one of the few people, well, you're the only person I know that can just drop Magic's name and Kareem.
Well, Randy, offense down to Kareem.
Yeah, you know. And you know what? Let me get you out here on this. Speaking of names, last night LeBron ties Larry Bird, sixth place NBA history, triple double. The Cavs, of course, with the win. We're watching something very, very special, aren't we? Every night.
Yeah, you know what? Yesterday on First Take on ESPN, they asked Scottie Pippen who was the greatest player of all time. And after defending Michael and then trying to give people an example of how great LeBron is, he said LeBron James is the greatest player of all time. Mike, Bill, that's something that I've been pushing for 3 years after watching him.
Yeah.
I tried to be diplomatic about it.
Sure.
And I kept looking. I said, you know what? This guy's better than Jordan.
Wow.
Why is it? And then how can our system and our league bail out by always, even Silver says he's the greatest player in the world, but you don't give him the MVP? There's no consolation in that.
Great point. Yeah, they're finally.
So it takes a great player like Scottie Pippen to say that. But it's something that I think a lot of players, ex-players, feel, but they're almost afraid to say. You can say it. LeBron James is the greatest player of all time. He has more impact on the game with the ball, has more impact on the game on any time he sets his foot on the floor, and no one in our league can score like he does in the fourth quarter. You can say that. It's over. Michael Jordan is one of the greatest individual talents I've ever seen. But he's no LeBron James. And before it's over, LeBron will clean up all this record stuff. And if all you're using is championships, you know, to say who's the greatest, I think you're missing the point. Because look at Wilt Chamberlain, you know.
Sure.
And there's been so many other great players in our league. LeBron James is the greatest player of all time. And I wish announcers would finally recognize that. But they don't do that. Our ex-NBA players won't do it. I don't know what they're looking at.
Well said, man, and you got the ring to prove it. You played it. Jim Jones with us, complete Cavaliers coverage, WTAM 1100. Jazz tomorrow night, 7:30 tip-off at the Q. Jim, great stuff. Have a great day, partner.
Thanks, Jim.
Thank you, guys.
News Radio, WTAM 1100. This is Bill Wills. Okay, movie time for the weekend. We've got Star Wars, The Last Jedi, Ferdinand, and The Shape of Water out. Kevin Carr joins me from FatGuysTheMovies.com. Good morning, Kevin.
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Let's build up to The Last Jedi. Let's start with The Shape of Water. This looks interesting. Octavia Spencer's in this thing. It plays out literally in a lab like 30, 40 years ago?
Yeah, it takes place in the 1950s, and the best way to describe it, even though I'm going to use I'm going to describe it with something from another studio, but it's like, it's basically a love story between this woman, a mute woman, played by Sally Hawkins, and the creature from the Black Lagoon. Essentially this Gilman creature that these scientists have brought back to study, and she develops a relationship with him, and it sounds so bizarre. And I think this originally came from Guillermo del Toro wanting to do his own version of Creature of the Black Lagoon, but having that fall through, so he kind of created his own movie that takes it from a very sensitive nature and a very different approach, where it looks at sort of overpowering views and consequences, and it has a lot to say, and it's told from a totally different perspective. Beautifully shot, gorgeous story, getting a lot of award nominations, not just for acting, for people like Sally Hawkins and Richard Jenkins, and even Doug Jones, who plays the Gilman creature. It's totally worthy of all of its all of the accolades. It's one of my favorite movies of the year.
Interesting for you to say. I have seen some buzz on this thing from the awards. So far, of what you've seen, you're saying The Shape of Water might be one of your picks, huh?
Absolutely.
Wow.
It's the one to watch this year.
Interesting. All right, Kevin Carr with me at FatGuysTheMovies.com. You probably, if you're a parent, you've read the story of Ferdinand to your son or daughter at bedtime. We have the movie Ferdinand, Kate McKinnon, one of the voices. Peyton Manning, I guess they broke him away from doing nationwide spots long enough to be a part of this, too. Tell me about The Young Bull.
Yeah, this one is, like you said, it's based on a children's book, a very classic children's book, and it's about a bull who doesn't want to go in the bullfighting ring. He'd rather, sort of smell the flowers and just live life and be happy. John Cena plays the voice of Ferdinand, and, it has that backbone of the story that's in the children's book, but, you know, because it's going to be a 90-minute movie, they add a lot more to it, and they give a little bit more of a story and a background, you know, sometimes to its detriment, instead of going into the silly nature of what cartoons and animation can be nowadays. It's done by the people who did Ice Age, so it has that sort of whimsical feel to it. It's cute, definitely something for kids. Maybe loses a little bit of the essence of purity that the book has, but yeah, you gotta. I guess that's how you make animated movies nowadays.
Want to take the kids to the weekend to see this weekend, Ferdinand and the Shape of Water. A couple movies from Kevin Carr at FatGuysTheMovies.com. It's a franchise that's been around for 40 years now. I said earlier this week, almost everybody was a kid the first time they saw Star Wars. And yet again, we've got another one here. Here's the Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi. Kevin Carr, take us there.
Well, this is really, you know, it's still early in this business for Disney doing the Star Wars movies. This is only the second one of the new series. Now, we had Rogue One last year, but that kind of existed on its own on the side of the stories. But so this is the next chapter that follows The Force Awakens. And, you know, you mentioned being a kid. I was 9 when Empire Strikes Back came out, and I remember seeing that in the theaters and how much I loved that movie. But it's a little bit disconcerting because I remember being 9 watching it and being, I want more. You know, nowadays, you just put in the next disc and watch it. But, you know, now we're in the middle of the series. So this one does follow a bit like Empire Strikes Back, where you split the characters up. Rey's out there trying to deal with Luke Skywalker. The rest of the people are on the run from the First Order, and it develops the characters. It gives them a little bit more complexity. It takes them to different places. It really preps all the new characters for a bigger story with them, in sort of passing the baton from the old cast to the new cast. Very well done, very exciting, and it has everything you'd expect, not just the character moments, but it had the action and the lightsaber fights and the explosions and the droids and plenty of humor, and also, you know, some very tender moments as well. You know, this was, you know, this is Carrie Fisher passed during the production of this film, so, you know, that has a significance to it as well. So, yeah, I mean, it certainly has everything you'd want from a Star Wars movie, and it's definitely the movie you're going to want to see this weekend.
Carrie Fisher in it a lot, or does she just stand out when she's in it?
She's in it quite a bit. I mean, they really developed the character more. I mean, she just sort of showed up once or twice in the last movie. So if you consider, like, The Force Awakens being Han Solo's movie that he carries as the character in the old cast, this is certainly Carrie Fisher's movie.
So you liked it?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I'm a huge Star Wars fan. I wish I could just put in the next disc.
The Star Wars movie, The Last Jedi, out this weekend, along with Ferdinand and The Shape of Water. Kevin Carr is at FatGuysTheMovies.com. Check his website out before you get out and check out any flick this weekend. Kevin, I'll be out next week. Thank you for all your time throughout the year. A very Merry Christmas to your family, and we appreciate it.
All right, back to you. Merry Christmas.